Emily Allen was a part of our congregation up until last week. Last week was her last week here, and she is traveling to Africa for short-term missions, and then after she comes home at the end of the summer, she is planning on working for just a year or two, as long as it takes to pay off all the debts that she has, and then move to Africa long-term to minister to the folks over in Africa. So she left this postcard with us last Sunday, and I asked her if I could read it, and she said absolutely. She said, "White water, thank you for giving me a home in Laramie. Although it's only been for a short term, I've been blessed by this gathering. God has used you to feed my soul. Thank you so much, Emily Allen." So I just wanted to let you guys know that we have another missionary over in Africa that you guys, whether you realized it or not, directly or indirectly have influenced and impacted her life, which means that you've indirectly influenced and impacted thousands of people's lives over in Africa now, once again. So I just think that's pretty awesome that that continues to happen here at Whitewater. This morning, we've got the kids in the service with us. We're experimenting with something new. We thought it'd be great for the moms on Mother's Day to spend even more time with their kids. Yeah. I don't know how this timing worked out here, but I'm sorry, moms. This is going to be a short sermon today, okay? For several reasons. Because it's Mother's Day, because we've got the kids in the service, because Adam and I have been teaching for like 50 minutes at a shot lately, and I don't know what's gotten into us, but evidently God has had a lot to say to us the past 4 or 5 weeks. So we're gonna bring it down, have a short night. Look, I've got one page of notes here. That's it, you guys. Be a short... Wow. Anybody who would like to stay after the service and be holy and get more teaching is welcome to. All you other pagans can go out and eat lunch. Sheesh. Have fun explaining to your kids what pagans means. Speaking of kids, we've got some things to give out to the children to give you guys a little break while they're in here this morning, and also to help them follow along as we tell our story this morning. So if I could have all the kids come up and grab a goodie bag out of the basket here. I'll set it right there. You guys grab one of those. It's full of stuff to help you guys follow along with the story this morning. There's plenty, so grab one. Any big kids who need help following along with the story, come grab one too. Troy, you need one, yeah. Awesome. There's still 5 or 6 left if you didn't get one. These were put together by our children's pastor, Kat Campbell. So thank you, Kat, for helping us out with the story this morning. And again, I don't know how this worked out where she got stuck doing the work on Mother's Day, but thank you. Guys, if you remember where... Hi. Those are my boys. Fashionably late to the party. If you remember where we left off with our story, Adam was bringing us up to the promised land, right? Moses sent Joshua and Caleb and 10 other spies into the promised land and said, "Hey, go check this place out, because this is where God has given us. This is what God has promised us from the very beginning, from the very get-go, from the beginning of Exodus when he called Moses. He said, look, I'm bringing you into this land. Remember this land that I promised to Abraham way, way back. Remember the land that I promised to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. And now you spent 400 years in slavery in Egypt, and now I'm finally going to bring you into this promised land. And Moses said, hey, all right, 12 guys, go check it out. Go tell me what you find. And they came back and said, no, there's no way. There's no way. There's giants in that land. We are too afraid. We can't take the land that God has promised us. And God got so tired of their complaining and their fearfulness and their lack of faith. They said, okay, fine. You guys aren't going into the promised land then. Your kids will. Your kids will go there, and until your kids are ready to go there, you guys just wander around in the desert. And so eventually that entire generation of God's people passes away, and this new generation comes up behind them, and then God says, all right, it's time. It's time. Moses was the last one of that previous generation to live, and when Moses finally passes away, then God says, Joshua, it's time. You bring your people into the promised land. And Joshua, I love this. I hadn't caught this in the story until I read it when I was prepping for this teaching. Joshua calls two other guys and he says, hey, you two, I want you to be spies and go check out the promised land again. And tell me what you find this time, 40 years later. Tell me how it is. And especially check out the town of Jericho. Because when we go into this promised land, there's this big walled, fortified city called Jericho that's standing in our way. And so we need to figure out a way to get through or past Jericho. So I know the last time we sent spies into the land, it didn't go so well. But I want you guys to go and try again. You have a chance for redemption. And so these two spies go into Jericho. And they are faithful and fearless. And they redeem the mistakes of their ancestors. But they're evidently incredibly poor spies. Because even though there's only two of them, they manage to arouse the suspicion of everybody else in Jericho as they're walking around this place. And pretty soon, the leaders of Jericho are like, those two guys over there, they're spies, and we need to get rid of them. And so these two spies see these guys coming, and they duck into the house of a woman named Rahab. And Rahab is a woman that has a questionable past. She is of questionable character. But she also fears God, which I think is an amazing dissonance that we can all relate to. And so she sees these two guys duck into her house, and she says, all right, I know that you're from God, and I know that God is going to give you this land, so I'm going to help you out. And so she ushers them up to her roof, where she takes some flax stalks and piles them on top of these spies and hides them on her roof. And the leaders of Jericho come into her house and say, hey, we saw two spies come in here. Where'd they go? And she's, I have no idea what you're talking about. What? I don't know. And evidently, the leaders of Jericho are at least as bad at seeking out spies as the spies are at being spies, because they search Rahab's house and can't find them anywhere. And they're up on the roof, hidden under these flax stalks. And so the men of Jericho leave, and Rahab runs up to the roof and says, guys, they're gone. You got to get out of here. So she takes a rope. She takes a rope and lowers them out of Jericho, down the side wall of Jericho. And she's like, when you go back to your people, when you go back to your leaders, please remember what I've done for you. and please save my family, because I know you're going to take this land. I know God has given it to you, but I'm begging you for mercy. And so the two spies give her a scarlet ribbon, and they say, put this in your window, and when we come back with our army, we will not take your family. We will spare your family and you if you tie this scarlet ribbon in your window. And so the spies go back to Joshua and they say, hey man, this looks great. Jericho is huge and it's fortified and it's got walls and there's no way our army can take it, but let's go do it because God has given it to us, which is awesome. And so God comes to Joshua and he says, all right, here's the deal. Take off your sandals, first of all, because the place on which you stand is holy ground, which echoes the words that God said to Moses when he first called Moses to lead his people to freedom. And he said, Joshua, here's the deal. We're going to cross the Jordan River to get you into the promised land. And there's other ways in, because these two spies didn't have to cross the Jordan River to get in. But when you take all of your people, you're going to cross the Jordan River to get into the promised land. Oh, and here's the catch. The Jordan River is at flood stage right now. And here's the other catch. I'm going to part the waters of the Jordan River for you, but not until you step foot into the river. Not until your leaders, not until your priests put their feet in the water am I going to do this for you. And Joshua says, okay, if that's the way it's going to be, that's the way it's going to be. So he goes and tells his people, he tells his priests, and he tells his leaders, look, this is what God told me. And they say, all right, if that's how it's going to be. And you guys catching, there's this inflection change in this story. Because our previous chapter had this imperfect obedience, right? Where people screwed everything up. And finally, this is a high point, a moment of glory for God's people, where everybody from the spies to Joshua to the leaders to the priests are all saying, all right, let's do this. We've been waiting for this for 40 years. And so they gather everybody up the next morning and they walk over to the Jordan River at flood stage. And the priests go and with miraculous faith, they start walking into this flooding river. And as soon as their feet touch the water, God parts it. And he lets them pass through. And the priests stand in the middle of the dry riverbed and watch as the Israelites file past them on either side. And then God comes down to Joshua again and says, hey, have 12 of your guys pick up one stone each from the riverbed of the Jordan River and take it up to the other side and stack those 12 stones up as an altar to me. So you remember. So every time you pass by this spot, you see those 12 stones there. You see these rocks piled up on top of one another. And you say, that is where God performed a miracle. That is where God brought us into the promised land. And so they pick up these miraculous stones, these stones from the dry riverbed. And they do that. They build an altar to God on the other side of the Jordan, of the river. And so they're on the other side of the river now, and Jericho stands before them. And they say, okay, we're ready. Let's do it. How's God want us to take this city? They're probably outmanned. They don't have the weaponry, the artillery, to take this fortified walled city. But they have faith, and they know that God is going to give it to them. They're like, All right, let's do this. And God comes down to Joshua again. And he says, here's how you're going to do it. Here's how you're going to do it. You're going to walk around the city once a day for 7 days. And on the seventh day, you're going to walk around the city 7 times. And after the seventh time you walk around the city, you're going to take out your ram's horns, these instruments that you have, and you're going to blow them, and you're going to shout. And when you shout and when you blow these horns, I will deliver Jericho to you. And so the people do it. And they walk around Jericho for 7 days. They walk around Jericho. And on the seventh day, they walk around it 7 times and they shout and they blow their horns. And the walls came a tumbling down. God rewards their faithfulness by collapsing the walls of Jericho. And then the people inside are so fearful that he allows the army of Israel to rout everybody inside the city. And they save Rahab, the woman of questionable past and character, who will go on to marry one of the Israelites and who will become one of the mothers in the lineage of Jesus. Which is pretty awesome. Well, they get into the promised land, and then they divide up the what is now the nation of Israel into tribes or states, essentially. And they divide it up, and they have 13 tribes. Jacob had 12 sons who became the 12 leaders of Israel. Do you guys remember how we end up with 13 tribes at this point in the story? That's right. Manasseh and Ephraim split into two. Out of who? Joseph. That's right. Because you guys remember Jacob, the trickster, the conniver? Up to the point where he dies on his deathbed. Well, where else would you die? Up to the point where he's laying on his deathbed, he is still a conniver and a trickster. And remember, Reuben screws up because he acts out of fear and tries to take control of the situation and tries to cement his birthright. And by acting out of fear, he insults his father, Jacob. And Jacob says, that's it, you're out. And then Simeon and Levi become men of bloodshed. And Jacob says, that's it, you're out, can't do it. And so Judah gets the birthright from Jacob. But Joseph is still Jacob's favorite son, so Jacob adopts Joseph's 2 sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, so that Joseph can have a double share of the inheritance as well. So that we end up with 13 tribes. The tribe of Levi becomes the tribe of the priests. And they don't get any land, but they live throughout the people and minister to the people while the other people get settled in their new land. And the rest of the book of Joshua is all about the military conquests of driving out the people who live in the promised land so they can settle there in their new home that God has given them. Well, guys, in our lives, God has a promised land for us as well, and that's the kingdom of God. And it's not a physical land, it's a spiritual land that we can take hold of. And the promised land for us is life in that kingdom, is eternal life, which John, one of the guys that followed Jesus, said eternal life is knowing God, getting 2 steps closer to him and his heart. And to get there, you guys, sometimes we have to do crazy things that don't make sense. Right? God telling the people of Israel that, hey, I'm not going to part these waters until you step foot in them is a crazy thing that doesn't make sense, but they do it. God telling them, hey, I don't want you to fight the people of Jericho. I want you just to walk around the city and blow your horns and shout. That's a crazy thing that doesn't make sense. Guys, once upon a time, I spent a week in the woods with a bunch of hippies. Which is a crazy thing that doesn't make sense. I went to the Rainbow Family Gathering when it was here in Wyoming, which is a gathering of like 20 to 30,000 hippies, like bona fide hippies. Like not the kind of, you know, wannabe hippies that like, you know, I don't know, wear Birkenstocks and drive a Prius, I don't know. Like I'm talking like bona fide hippies, like the people who live in the woods and don't shower and run around naked, like those kind of hippies. And I went there with a group called Bread of Life, who goes to these hippie gatherings to serve food and to love on these people who need to be loved on. And I went there, and there are a ton of stories that I can tell you from that experience. But this morning, I just want to tell you about some of the crazy things that God told me to do while I was there that don't make sense. There was, at the Bread of Life camp, there was a tent called the prophecy tent. And I've never been much for the charismatic side of faith with the healing and the prophesying and the signs and wonders and that sort of things. I've always, unfortunately, had a cynical approach to that kind of stuff. But God completely changed my heart about that stuff while I was in the woods with a bunch of hippies. And I was curious, so I sat under the prophecy tent just to see what it was all about. And the first guy that came into the prophecy tent, there was three of us sitting under there, two people who had experience in this kind of stuff, and me. And there was a girl who came into the prophecy tent while I was there, just sitting there like, yeah, let's see what this is all about. Whatever. And when somebody came into the prophecy tent, these other folks would tell them, look, we're not here to do magic or anything like that. We are here to pray to God, the God of the universe, the one and only creator who made you and knows you and loves you, and we're going to pray to him and ask him what he would have us say to you. And so they made it very clear what was going on, and this girl said, all right, go for it. And so we bowed our heads and we spent time in prayer, and I was like, all right, what? This is weird, what's going on? When all of a sudden, God placed a vision, a picture in my mind and told me what the picture meant. And when we stopped praying, I looked up and I said, God gave me a message for you. And it was very odd and very weird for me to say that. But I said, look, I got a picture of a little girl swinging on a swing set and there was a lion approaching her from behind. And at first, when I got that picture, I thought that you were that little girl and I needed to warn you about something. But as I prayed about it, God said that you, this hippie girl, you are supposed to protect that little girl from that lion. And that lion doesn't represent just one instance of danger that you need to protect her from. It represents some sort of systemic injustice that is being played out against her. And this hippie girl got tears in her eyes. And she said, back in the real world, she was a defender in the Utah court systems. And she worked on behalf of children. And that she was about ready to give up on her job because the Utah court systems were so patriarchal and so traditional and so old-fashioned, and that it was incredibly difficult to be an advocate for children there. And specifically, she was working on the case of a little girl. And that she was about to give up because it was so hard. She said, I know that now I have to go back and fight for that little girl. Thank you. And there was another time when we were walking out just around this crazy, weird camps. And we went up to another kitchen that was serving food, and I saw a girl standing behind the counter who was prepping food. And God told me, you need to tell her this message. And I said, yeah, right, that's not going to happen. He said, no, you don't understand. You need to go tell her this message. And I said, no, she's prepping food. She's back behind. She's, you know, no. And I said, God, if this is you, I bowed my head and I prayed and I said, God, if this is from you, you need to bring her to me. I am not going to her. And I looked up from praying and here she comes walking out of the kitchen straight towards me. I said, okay, God, you win. And so I grabbed my buddy Micah who was there. And I said, Micah, come here. And he's like, what's going on? I don't have time to explain. Come on. So I grabbed him and I walked up to her and said, I have a message from God for you. And she said, okay. I said, God wants you to know that even though you struggle with this, that you are beautiful and that he loves you and that he wants to adopt you as his child. And she said, okay. And walked off. But I was faithful to what God told me to do. Eventually. Guys, that's just two stories out of a myriad of crazy things that God told me to do that didn't make a whole lot of sense when I was spending time in the woods with hippies. Maybe God is not calling you or telling you to prophesy over hippies. Maybe God is not telling you to step foot in a river at flood stage and watch as he parts the waters. Maybe God is not telling you to march around a city seven times. But God is calling you, telling you to do a lot of crazy stuff that doesn't make sense, you guys. He is. He is asking you to forgive that person who hurt you so deeply. That's a crazy thing that doesn't make sense, but he is asking you to do that. He is asking you to show grace to and hang out with the people that the world ignores or looks down on or doesn't care about. He is asking you to give a ton of your money away to bless other people. He is asking you to give possessions away so that you own them and they don't own you. He is asking you not to claim the attention or the glory, but to be okay when other people get it and to be okay directing it to him. These are crazy things that don't make a lot of sense. He is asking you to become nothing in order that you might elevate other people around you. These are crazy things that don't make sense. And we don't do these things to receive blessings from God. That's not what the promised land is all about. We do these things because it's how we enter into life in the kingdom. Just like the Israelites, the people of our spiritual heritage, we can choose to spend our times wandering around aimlessly, living in fear, complaining. We can choose to live our lives like that. Or we can choose to listen to God's crazy instructions. Take down the Jerichos that are standing in the way of our promised land and enter into that Zoe life, that abundant life, pressed down and overflowing that God has promised us. So I encourage you guys, as we leave here, to do the crazy things that God is asking, whether that's something specific that he's asking you to do, or whether it's one of those more general ideas. Do the crazy things that God asks you to do and enter into life in the promised land.